What I would ask is, and I know you get asked this a lot, can you summarize for people Agenda 21, when it began, and just the level of pervasiveness now, all of these agendas, all of these policies that all our countries and politicians have signed up without our knowledge, and ultimately where this is leading for the 21st century?
Well, that certainly is a lot to talk about, and I will sum it
In
up for
30
you.
words or less, I'm just
Right, okay, my pleasure. All right, so here's what United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, is a real plan. It is a conspiracy, but it is not a theory. It's a conspiracy fact. It was agreed to. It is a United Nations plan. Agreed to in 1992 by 178 nations, including Ireland, the United States, all the UK, and 178 nations plus the Holy See. It is the comprehensive blueprint. It's the action plan to inventory and control all land, all water, all minerals, all plants, all animals, all construction, all means of production, all energy, all education, all law enforcement, all food production, all information, and all human beings in the world. It is a totally comprehensive plan. It's a completely pervasive plan. It is the plan to inventory and control everything on the planet, including you. And it was agreed to. Now, when you, of course, if you look at my videos or you know anything about United Nations Agenda 21, you're going to see this pop up from Wikipedia. The first thing it says is it is it's a voluntary, non-binding plan. Yes, that is true. It was a voluntary, non-binding plan with the United Nations, but it was brought back into your country by your country, by your federal governments, and agreed to by your government to implement in your country. Now, in the United States, it was agreed to, as I said, in 1992 by President George Bush. John Major agreed to it in the UK. It was brought back to the U.S. in 1993. Clinton took office, and 6 months later, he created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. The entire plan and purpose of that council was to get United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, into every single state, city, in the United States. Now, it is a global plan, but it's implemented locally. So the way you see it is, you know, you see it as any number of names. You never see it called Agenda 21. And that's one reason why, you know, a lot of people say, well, hey, you know, I don't see it. I don't know what it is. It's a plan to globalize the entire planet. Now, the nation state is vestigial. The idea is that we will move out of the nation state and into the global single world government. And yes, this does sound ridiculous. I completely agree. When I first heard about it, being a liberal Democrat, and my background is I'm an expert witness in land use and land valuation. I was a district branch chief for the California Department of Transportation and testified in court. So everything that I look at has to be supported, or I can't, you know, I don't talk about it. Everything I talk about is supported by documents, not just something you find on the web, but documents that you're going to find right on your shelf in your city, in your planning department, whatever. So this plan, it is a global plan implemented locally. Globalization is the standardization of all systems. So the way that, you know, you standardize all systems, you standardize legal systems, educational systems, energy systems, and law enforcement, of course. So that's what the plan is designed to do. It is happening. That is why so many more people are aware of it now, because it is coming out of the shadows. I called my book Behind the Green Mask because it wears the green mask of environmental concern, but it is not about real concern for the planet. It's really about control, inventory and control. So the plan is designed to take you out of the rural and suburban areas and put you into the dense city centers where you can be more easily managed, controlled, and surveilled. And I definitely want to talk about Sidewalk Labs, Quayside, and Toronto in a minute. What I do want to say is that this plan is a plan for totalitarian control. And you don't just do that overnight in the world. In order to do that, you use, of course, all totalitarian states share the same characteristics. They need terror. They use the vision of the glorious future, and of course, austerity and scarcity in the moment. And of course, that's what you see with 9/11. You saw terror with the climate change issue. It's about terror, and of course, COVID. And so this is the implementation of the surveillance state. So this is, you know, this is, of course, as I say, global crisis requires a global response, mm-hmm. and that justifies global governance. So that's what you have. Now, climate change just, you know, although it's huge, it wasn't making it. They had to really, they're close. They could smell it, right? They want it. They want to get there. And this, you know, having this virus and potentially vaccine, really, they get to gauge. There's an opportunity there for the mega corporations and the, what I call the global controllers, to be able to gauge at what point they're at. And so they've gotten us all to stay inside of our houses, completely cowed and wearing a rag over our faces whenever we go anywhere, which I believe is also a test for all of their surveillance devices, so that they can see if they can identify us with just our eyes, and you know, separating us by 6 feet, so we can be really surveilled. as far as what you're talking about, Dave, with the rural moving people out of the rural areas, the rural and suburban areas allow you to be much more independent. You can grow your own food, possibly. You can be out there. You can be in your yard. You can have a private home with a private space around it. So what's happening is that your ability to be out there in the rural areas is being restricted. Whether your water use is being restricted through monitoring of your wells, your roads are being pulverized and turned to gravel. You're finding that you're not able to get a mortgage. As you said, you can't get insurance. A lot of times you're having disasters out in those rural areas, maybe fire, cannot get fire insurance any longer. You're going to have your services restricted, so your schools out there are going to be restricted. You're, you know, less schools, less services, less police and fire, less postal services, etc. And then the people who are still out there are going to carry that huge, heavy tax burden. So they can't handle that. They're going to be giving up those lands. Now, at this point, we're all in huge debt. And we need to look at this as an economic plan as well on the Great Reset. And so when you look at the huge economic debt that we're in, you have to look at what is collateral. What is our collateral? What do we give in return for holding that debt? We give our land and we give our energy, our work, our ability to work, right? We give our support. So your land, of course, is worth a lot more than you are. So to move you off of your land means that your land is then available perhaps for large-scale development and large-scale energy and mineral extraction, resource extraction later, whether it's timber, water, minerals, animals, whatever it's going to be. Getting you off of it. And, you know, human beings are simply a hindrance to this plan. The major cities will be are constructing now high density development that is the hardscape for your future poverty.
Yeah. And in addition to that, there's the level of surveillance. You know, it was very interesting. I watched a Wall Street Journal report, and it was back from 2017. And I've reported on this before because it was a striking contrast with where we are now in the West. And this is 2017 and the slow implementation of the social credit system, an enormous amount of surveillance, facial recognition systems. But I won't be able to pronounce it quite correctly. This was Xingzhou is the name of the city. And there was a wine store owner there who was talking about, you know, the amount of constant security checkpoints and the metal detectors, and the police will even check your phone and all this kind of stuff. So day after day, several times a day, you're just constantly being interfered with and pestered all the time. And what he said was it made him not want to go out. And that is actually effectively the world that I feel they're making for us slowly but surely under the social distancing. And I produced a video today talking about what they're doing to restaurants, pubs, bars. They're making them unworkable, and they know what they're doing. They know that they won't be able. Look, on a Friday or Saturday night, typical normal night, the old normal, right? We had a situation where these pubs need to be stacked, all right, with people. They just need to be absolutely full in order to turn a profit. Well, now they won't be able to. And I think this is known, that these businesses will ultimately go under. And what will be left is property that will be extremely cheap, because no one else is actually going to be able to, is going to be, well, how could you justify renting or buying it? What kind of business are you going to run? Right? And also I feel more and more that this is just cutting off all of the simple joys and pleasures of life. And I've described this as what appears to be global communism. And at the same time, you can see, as I had Ernst Wolf, an economist, on the show some weeks ago, he described this as a fascist financial coup. Where would you describe the economic or social political ideology behind this? Is it a merger of the two? Is it the worst of absolute capitalist corporate control? Because all that's going to be left is, you know, you're either going to work for a big massive corporation or you're going to work for the government as a contact tracer, from what I can see. Where are we actually headed here?
Yeah, this is so good. You know, this is the whole the fascist model, you know, combined with, you know, the Chinese model, which sort of is the idea here is, do you have value? What kind of value do you have as a human being? Your value will be measured. You know, the Nazis did this. You know, did you have value? The Chinese credit score is a way of measuring this. And yes, it is a fascist. It's a mega corporate plan. It does devalue property. You're absolutely right, Dave. And very few people pick this up, that the plan is designed also to completely devalue your property. Now, just think about this for a minute, and I'll tell you how this works. Okay, so property is devalued not just out in the rural and suburban areas where it can be acquired by land trusts and, you know, and taken out of private hands. It's taken out of private individuals' hands, put into the so-called private public-private partnerships of land trusts and government. But then you have your inside of your cities, you have, I'll just give you an example here, two examples I'm going to give you of huge corporate landholders. Okay, so we're going to look at two. One is Simon Property Group, which is a commercial shopping center developer and owner, $42 billion in assets, mainly in the United States. They own the biggest shopping malls in the center of towns. They are on the New York Stock Exchange. Their number, their value went from about 170 a share down to about 50 a share. So it's a huge drop. All right, so what happened? They're going out of business, all right? So what happens when you have a loss of value like that? And I'll give you one in the UK, which is, it's called Capital Shopping Centres. They change it to INTU. It's on the London Stock Exchange as INTU. They went from 81 to 7, okay? And this is in the last year. So property values, now these are big holders of land because they have big shopping centres. They're dropping hugely, dropping, plummeting in value. So the central business districts are being converted to high-density residential, and a lot of that is being purchased. That land is being purchased cheaply from the banks that will acquire it when everything crashes. It'll be acquired by the banks and then transferred to the government. The government will then transfer it to low-cost property developers who will develop it. As I said, the hardscape for your future poverty, low-income housing, mixed-income housing, high-density, piled on top of, you know, piled apartment buildings in the center of your towns. This is, you know, you'll have buildings that are taller than anything else in your town that'll be acquired by your government, subsidized and paid for by your government. It'll be for-profit housing that'll be subsidized by your government. And this is to get you out. There's got to be a place for it. Also, this is one reason for the immigration, influx of immigration. You have huge influxes of people coming in that are not, and this is another idea that I want to talk about, misanthrope, where you're in your, you know, your COVID, your new COVID life, where you can't actually deal with people anymore. Yeah. Where when you walk out, everyone is the enemy, including you. Your you're unreasonably terrified all the time. You can't even trust anyone that you live with. And your feeling is that, there's something so deeply wrong, you just want to stay in your house with your virtual reality headset on and transfer your life to something that's online. And so this is a way to get you out of the way. Human beings are simply, an obstruction to this plan.
Yeah, and it feels as though to me that hints have been dropped by the media for quite some time. Yes, they tried the environmental thing and they were saying things like, isn't it interesting actually that both COVID and the environmental thing were both kind of leading us in the same kind of narratives. And so they said, last couple of years have been reports from CNN, The Guardian, other places like that, and they're saying things like, eventually there's going to be a situation where it's not going to be enough food for everyone, so we're going to have to start eating insects. And we're going on and on and on about insects. There was an absolute massive spike in articles last year and the year before, just out of nowhere, we're going to start eating insects. And what's this about? Well, clearly they're priming people for significant food shortages. And at the same time, there was talk about, in the future, we're going to be kind of living this sort of pod life. You probably saw this in San Francisco. There was a report about this, what were effectively, they were like flop houses, and you had no privacy. And so you just had, it looked like a concentration camp or something. You just had a bed, and there were just common areas, and no one had any privacy. That's literally all you had. And to me, what you've described, if it is true that all of our coffee shops, restaurants, bars, in other words, the stuff that's in a city, right, as well as the fact that all of the high street is being eliminated. So all of these stores like Primark and so forth, who think, oh yeah, we're going to have the social distancing circles and the arrows on the floor, and that should solve the problem. And we'll just make sure that nobody can try on any clothes in the store and just try them on at home. And we're going to limit the number of people that can come into our store. I mean, this is obviously, again, designed to shut you down gradually, but not make it look too obvious. Blame it on the COVID as opposed to the regulations. And once that's over, there will be an enormous amount of space for them to do these kinds of things. And as you say, with the massive influx of immigrants, the identity of a place is changed. People feel very deracinated. They feel very dislocated. And what it does then is it's very easy to do what they're doing now, which is just to stoke ethnic, racial divisions between people and keep them on their toes, so that it's while we're busy fighting amongst each other, we won't focus our attention on the true people behind this plan.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. That's it. You've got it. it's the failed state model. The key words for this are disrupt and transform. You can't transform the existing system. You have to destroy it. That's a full transformation is completely destroying the existing system and using social and behavioral manipulation and tactics to do it. And that is part of this plan. The other thing is, of course, to use the Human Genome Project and the idea that human beings, as I said, they're a hindrance, they're an obstruction to the plan itself. So right now we're in this process. As I said, we're in an inventory and control phase, and we're still really in the inventory phase. And so that requires that your hubs of true production, which are the universities. The universities are joined with corporations now. The universities serve two purposes. One is to warehouse youth and suck their value, their money out of them and indoctrinate them. Those are the people who really don't have any value. There are people though in the world who do have value, and they are being searched for. That's the purpose of these huge high-end research universities right now, is to find people who do have value and then bring them into these universities so that their innovation can be owned and exploited by the by the major corporations. So you can go to Cornell University's. They did a video. Engineers developed three major traits of life. If you want to look at the ideology for this plan, you can go back to the Fabian socialists of the mid-1800s, 1880s. Man is always, but you can also look at human beings, and what man has always wanted is to live forever and to create life. So right now we can't live forever, but we're doing full life extension, and that is going to be fully developed, and creating life. with artificial intelligence and robotics is a goal. So, you know, 23andMe, owned by Google, run by Sergey Brin's, I think his ex-wife now, Ancestry.com, the Human Genome Project. This is all about, and then ultimately vaccines, ultimately looking to for ways to isolate human beings who have value and eliminate those who don't. And, you know, this has been a plan. Certainly we've seen the manifestation of it many times now in history, fairly recent postmodern history. So, and that's one thing the Chinese credit score does, is it just sort of makes it a lot easier. You can identify people and simply isolate them. Your standing room only buildings, you know, where you're isolating certain people into small units where they can be more easily managed, controlled, and surveilled in a downtown area, makes it so that it's much easier to implement this plan. And so, you know, concentrating these populations. Plus, when you have mixed income populations together, you have a lot more stress. And this is one reason why I call it the new poverty fashion. Because, you know, you have Mark Zuckerberg in a T-shirt with holes in it or something. You have people who go up and down their elevator in their mixed income smart growth apartment building, where there will be people in there who are formerly homeless, you know, recently homeless. And everybody's wearing the same, you know, checked shirt and has the same, you know, neck tattoos and the same ragged haircut, no matter how much money you have, because, you know, it's cool to look poor. And so this is a way to, you know, to re-engineer the social, you know, what they like to call the social contract. Of course, when you think of a contract, usually contracts require two parties to agree. But in this case, their social contract, it does not require two parties to agree. They made this contract, and this contract is being imposed upon us.
Well, it's very chilling here, because I'm going to try to get into the mindset behind much of where our people are now, I suppose. I've had my own okay Karen moment during the weekend when somebody actually said to me, can you keep your distance, because I wasn't standing exactly on the circle. And I know of somebody who had a similar argument with somebody, I think it was a store manager, about this as well. Are you taken aback from what you've seen, where maybe where you live, at the acquiescence of the populace so suddenly to this? I mean, there was somebody who was saying recently, I was watching a video about this, they were talking about that it's almost as if there's an innate quality within certain people to be able to identify tyranny, to see this, to look over the horizon and see what's coming, right? Whereas most people just, this is the scariest thing, is the groupthink, is this, it's like a possession, like the zombie apocalypse type thing. I have, a few months ago, I was of the mindset of, if we can't convince most people here that this is an obvious con, with the data that we have managed to unlock and research, then I think that we probably won't. And so my thing has been, well, look, perhaps the best thing for us to do is to focus on like-minded individuals and to build that future, right? To not try to save all of humanity. I think this is unrealistic. I think the system that we're in, this particular Western world, the economic system, it's going down. And the best thing that we can do is perhaps to get out of the way. And instead of focusing, Rosa, constantly on trying to react to what the globalists are going to do next and kind of bat the tennis ball back as it comes out of the machine, instead to try to, the kind of civil disobedience mindset of just gradually separating ourselves to the best of our ability. That's a very difficult thing to do in a world that they're trying to surveil us in. But what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. That's such an excellent question, Dave. I have to, you know, commend you for putting that together so well, because this is a big issue. You'll see community-oriented policing, and that's going to be, you know, exported around the world. And that is part of high-density development, where you're in a, you know, high-rise unit in the center of your town. You are the eyes on the street. That's supposed to be your job. You're there to watch, to report, see something, say something. And, of course, there are many, many people who are more than willing to do this for free, you know, to be the people who report, to be the people who point out, to be the people who, you know, want to, you know, stand on the side of the controllers. And not from any reason that they're afraid, but just because they want to associate themselves with that power, or they want to, you know, to fly under the radar themselves in some way or another, petty criminal or whatever they are. So this is, you know, also a mental health manipulation, this entire plan. And, you know, where you have civil society, government agencies, and social services all joined together to implement it, and it's for your own good. This is the, you know, the communitarian mindset. It's to expand the police force, militarize it, and then have you be a sort of a pseudo-deputized, you know, eye-on-the-street person. And, you know, it's really designed this way purposely. It's designed, you know, in the dark night of my soul, you know, I really wonder, you know, am I out there as flypaper? You know, what can be done? When I try and envision what, you know, what can be done, you know, I feel like my mind is rusty gears. You know, I'm really trying to think of how to envision this, because you can't run away from this. This is the panopticon. It is being designed purposely to be full surveillance everywhere. So it's not designed so that you can go and have your intentional community and just kind of let this thing wash over you like a wave and leave you untouched. So that is why we do need to, this is very important, we do need to strategize about what we need to do. The first thing we need to do, and, you know, this is sort of my slogan, is awareness is the first step in the resistance. The first thing we need to do is make very clear this is not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy fact. It's been going for a long time. It's not just an ideology. It's actually hardscape. It's actually in your documents right there in your city. It's being done, you know, who's implementing it locally is career civil servants, people who have 20, 25 years, who've been indoctrinated in university, people who are members of these different international groups, which are real groups. I'll just give you one, UCLG, which is UnitedCitiesAndLocalGovernments.org, UCLG. Dublin and Cork are members. And, of course, London, New York, all the major cities in the world. 240,000 cities in 140 countries. What do they do? Their entire purpose for existing, they say that they're there to empower local government. But really what they're there to do is to empower local government to make sustainable development goals happen. And that is all a green mask. That's my book, Behind the Green Mask. The green mask is not about erasing poverty and, oh, aren't we going to live in a happy environment? The green mask hides what we're seeing right now. So it's full control, inventory, and surveillance. And so these are groups that your civil servants, your local civil servants there, your ultimate Karens, are out there who are they're intending to make, to actually turn the ship of your government to actually support this global governance plan. And they have been very successful. And that is where we are. So what we need to do to resist is, yes, join together, speak out, and refuse to collaborate with this plan. Refuse to cooperate as much as you possibly can. I do want to say, of course, Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, 100 years long, Agenda 2030 does not replace Agenda 21. It's a 30-year milestone, as I said. And so 2020, 2025, 2030, 2040, 2050, these are all milestone years. And this is, you know, definitely a plan. The plan is funded, hugely funded by mega corporations. You'll find foundations like the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and all the, you know, all you have to do is listen to your public television and you'll see who funds them. And that's exactly who's funding this plan. We're being trained to obey. We're being censored and we're being trained to obey, and we're being trained to, you know, all you have to do really, if you wonder how it's going to go, is just take a look at the Nazis. Take a look at the Nazis, take a look at Stalin, and take a look at the Chinese. These are totalitarian systems that reward people who go along with the plan and destroy anyone who raises an objection to it. and you know, whether it'll be full exile or whether it'll be you know, death. You know, that the plan is designed to silence us. We are in a really special moment right now. We're right close to it. We can still speak out. No one's holding a gun to our heads yet. So what we're going to see, okay, and you know, this is conditioning us to obey. You don't leave the house without a rag over your face. You you take a look at someone and you judge whether it's worthwhile or not to risk your life to have a conversation with this person. It puts you into a panic when your child comes home and you don't know where they've been. Literally, people are panicked, and when you're panicked, you can't think clearly. So you're not able to make decisions. You also feel you're put back into an infantilized condition in your life where you're dependent on someone else to tell you if it's okay for you to do the most basic things that you never even thought about before. Basic things that, you know, like whether you can go out and get something to eat or not, whether it's all right to go, you know, step out of your house or not, whether it's all right to start a relationship with someone, and whether it's okay to have a child, to go to a hospital, to be taken care of. So whether someone's worth it or not. So the idea of credit scores and being able to determine someone's value then really comes down to, you know, the individual. So we're going to see this more and more where we're going to be transformed. Our personal consciousness is transformed. We're behaviorally adapted to a new normal, and this is their plan. What they want to do is restrict us as much as possible and to restrict our movement, restrict our choices, restrict our ability to make decisions for ourselves. And that will just continue. This model is not unique. You see it in chess, you know, you can see it in, and I think, you know, chess is a particularly interesting way of looking at this because, you know, you get your opponent to, you lull your opponent into a place where they're, you know, being distracted and thinking that they're safe. And then that's when you, do your checkmate. And this is something that we're going to see, you know, yes, we'll be battered. We'll be beaten. We'll finally say, okay, fine. Yay. We can go outside again. And then it'll slam down on us, and we will accept this. We will accept this. And those of us who do not accept, I'll tell you that these, starting with Extinction Rebellion and then, you know, all of these, you know, movements that are out in the streets, in France, you know, Hong Kongers, the reason we're seeing this is that we are being warned. We're being shown that this is what happens to you if you want to go out and object. This is what's going to happen to you if you want to take to the streets. Now, if you want to take the streets and support our plan, if you're there to disrupt and transform the system and you're our people, then we won't disturb, we will not bother you. But if you're out there, you know, if you want to go out there and you want to argue about surveillance or you want to fight the COVID thing or you want to talk about climate change and you want to say this is not a reason to destroy all of our industry, to deindustrialize the world, if you want to talk about that, you're an enemy of the state and you will be controlled. This is why many, many more people will be going underground, and that is an option. So if you're relegated to a situation where you're desperate, where you're down and out in Paris and London, where you're looking for, you know, something to eat all the time, then you will not be making trouble for, you know, for the economic powers. The other thing that this plan does, this plan is a great equalizer. This is what economy, ecology, and social equity are with the three pillars of Agenda 21. When you have the idea for a megacorporation is to be able to open all markets. And so there are huge markets around the world that have not been opened and because of regulation, because of restriction or whatever. So the idea is to level the developed economies and to take that money and to raise up the lesser developed economies so that they can then be joining the world market and actually purchase all of these goods and services that are being produced and to produce those goods as cheaply as possible in the least expensive areas as possible. And to then also direct the not just the economies, but the political and economic and educational philosophies of these people. So this is really the Great Reset is the great redistribution, and it's also the great restriction on the developed nations, on the developed economies. And this is going to have, you know, believe me, you talk about political unrest. We're going to, when people start to realize that they have lost everything, there's going to be major unrest.
Which and itself is another crisis to justify militarized police, super martial
law. Exactly. And that will be the next step, full militarization of the military, and perhaps even a need to, as President Trump says, to use the military, the National Guard, to make sure the vaccine gets out to everyone. I think there, of course, are people, you know, who are forming what they consider to be the resistance and militarizing themselves and stockpiling food and stuff like that. I think, you know, all of that, when you're in an area, you might be out there in Montana or something like that, you think you're isolated. With the surveillance state, you're not really isolated. And again, who you've elected to represent you is very important. Your sheriff is extremely important, who you vote for. If you vote for a sheriff, you need to make sure that sheriff actually is there as your first line of defense in protecting you. If you're out in a rural area, as I said, you know, you can think you're fine out there. You got your well water, et cetera. And then you get some guy elected in your county who actually puts a monitor on your well and makes it so you can't stay out on your land. So it's very important to recognize who it is that's making those rules and to be that person if you can be, so that you can create, you know, but unfortunately what you might end up having is creating pockets, you know, where you're going to have Waco or something like that. I think one thing is that you need to opt out of the surveillance society. And so you do not want to be a first adopter of augmented reality and virtual reality. Once you do that, once you start using virtual reality, I'm telling you, your life will be over. It is far more attractive and appealing to you than any life you're going to have in real dimension. So do not accept that piece of candy from that stranger. You want to also get rid of your cell phone. Now it's required. If you want to take a look at where it's going, yes, I like that, and I have a clamshell. If you want to see where it's going, take a look at China. You know, they're requiring that people carry that surveillance device with them at all times, and they have a QR code that allows them either to get into their home or not, to get into public transportation or not. So you do not want to accept that, and you want to push back. You want to expose collaborators. You've got phone poles in your town. Make up flyers and put them on those poles. Go around. We've got flyers on our websites for you. If you don't like my flyers, make your own flyers, please. You want to reach as many people as possible. You want to put them on doorsteps. If you're using electronic media, if you're using Facebook and all that stuff, use it for this purpose only. I don't want to see one more stupid cat video, okay? Forget that. Your life has now changed. You are the resistance. Let's be the resistance together. This is it now. You don't do it now, you're not going to have a chance. You're not going to, you know, because what did the Nazis do? I just want to come back to the Nazis for a minute here. Because the Nazis, you know, the first guy off the train or the first guy into the square who said, hey, this is wrong, got shot. And everyone saw it and was like instantly getting in line. You don't want to wait until that point. And one other thing I like to say is that I know that every single one of you thinks that you would have been in the resistance during World War II. You all think that. There's not any person out there who thinks they would have gotten up in the morning and put on a Nazi uniform. So this is your opportunity now. You know, this is your chance to show yourself who you are, really. And if you go look in that mirror and you look into your eyes and you say, I know I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit on my couch and do nothing. Then look in your eyes and say that and know that that's who you are.
But Rosa, I will just conclude by saying that people can find you on DemocratsAgainstUNAgenda21.com, and also you can be found over on Twitter at Rosa Corey. I'll include that link below. Is there any other final message that you wanted to tell people about your work, or just give them another good verbal kick in the ass? Lord knows we all need it, Rosa.
Yeah, please get my book. It's called Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21, and it's got its own website, behindthegreenmask.com. And be visible, Okay, that's the best, most important thing you can do. Be visible. Be brave. Get out there. Be visible. Be, you know, that's like what they tell you when there's a bear coming at you. You want to get as big as you possibly can. So do that. Be as big as you possibly can. And we can. There is a chance. And we need to take it. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's now or never. Rosa, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you.
Take care.